This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum and thispipelife.com. We thank them for their support of this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD.
Hey, Bo. Good evening, man.
Man, good evening to you, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Dude, I'm doing well. Doing well. It's been a busy few days here around the shop. You know, it's funny. Normally, July kind of slows down after, you know, Father's Day's in June. It's real busy, and then it kind of starts slowing down. It gets so hot and everything. But, man, we've just been rocking and rolling, dude. It's been great.
I love it. Love to hear it.
It's been really good. Lots of cigar smokers this time of year start to filter back in. And
yeah, what is the seasonal nature of cigars?
Well, you know, we talk about that occasionally. You know, obviously, we're always complaining about the heat here. But, you know, there is something to be said about this time of year. You're out grilling and, you know, stuff like that. And you just don't necessarily want to fool with your pipe as much. And so we've got all these folks that come in and immediately just start gravitating towards a cigar. And so for some reason, of course, our shop is so rare. It's very pipe centric, as you know, as we've talked about, you know, before. And so, you know, here we've always got pipe smokers coming and going. But the cigar stuff definitely kind of spikes in the summertime. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something we see.
Okay,
fair enough. I've been smoking more myself recently. I've enjoyed a boutique brand that I've become really fond of called Curavari. Real small batch stuff. Yeah. Curavari, they kind of interesting little company, but man, they just make some great small batch stuff. Their Cafe and Cafe Noir series are great. Their Reserva Limitada is probably the closest thing to a Cuban cigar I've ever had that was not made in Cuba. Really, really good stuff. But yeah, I've been enjoying some Stogies, man. It's been good.
All right, fair enough, man.
You want to smoke one with me sometime?
Yeah, I like Stogies. I like cigars. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. I see that look in your eye. You want to make fun of me.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Do you?
That was a heavy cigar, sir. Okay, look.
Probably didn't have enough on your stomach either.
John David's referring to the last time that I was in the shop smoking a cigar. It was a gift from my brother. And it was a pretty heavy cigar for someone who had not been eating that day and doesn't typically smoke cigars.
It was a really mild cigar, but I'm just glad you were close to the bathroom.
All right.
Yeah. I took good care of you. I brought you plenty of water, and I got a cold towel to like compress against your forehead.
No, this
stuff.
Is true. One of the best things about John.
That's really
David.
What happened.
In the midst of your trauma, he will be there. He will support you. But as soon as the trauma has passed and all is well, he will make fun of you and never let it go. Man. Okay. So this week, last week, I was in Chicago.
Yeah, dude. Tell us about your trip.
Dude. All right. The store there that I mentioned last week that I was going to.
I have always called it Ewan Reese.
I always mispronounce it.
And then I think you'll have purists that because it's Eastern European in origin, I think they call it Ewan Reese.
Ewan Reese, really?
I think it's maybe German or Austrian or something. I'm not.
Are you giving me a hard time?
Sure.
Are you sure?
No, I'm dead serious about that. I've heard people call it Ewan Reese before, kind of like that V sounding W that you hear sometimes in German language, you know, Germanic languages. I've always called it Ewan Reese.
Ewan Reese. All right.
So you can call it Ewan Rice if you want.
Look, see, I get in trouble with this. In the pipe community, I've already gotten in trouble several times by pronouncing things the wrong way, but it's a curse, unfortunately.
But, dude, you went.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
The guys were great.
Did you realize that store has been open since, like, the Civil War? Like, not quite the Civil War, but, like, shortly thereafter.
Right in that era.
Dude.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, four or five generations. Like, I had a great shop talk with the manager of the shop, who's also the owner, or the inheritance. Like in line for the ownership to sit the Iron Throne, but an awesome shop filled with a ton of character. They've got their smoking lounge. It's raised up, and you know, like Chicago. I hadn't been to Chicago in years, and so like you know, it's literally like when you're walking the roads in certain areas, you're like three layers from the ground. Like there's like a underground subway, and then there's like an underground parking, or like there's underground parking, and then there's underground subway or something like that.
Okay.
Like, it was really bizarre. Breyer and I were actually walking around downtown. Breyer, my co-founder for Satchel and a good friend of ours. And we were looking for a restaurant. And somebody actually, we called up the restaurant. And we said, we're here. GPS is saying we are right here. And they said, do you see stairs? And we looked on the pavement. And we saw stairs going down. They're like, go down the stairs. And I'm like, okay, where are we going?
You're going to get me murdered.
No, but seriously, there's like a whole underground layer to Chicago and apparently an underground layer to that. Here's the thing, though.
Okay.
So we go into this this beautiful, beautiful shop. We go in. We take a look at the massive amount of inventory they've got. I mean, ridiculous numbers of pipes. Their pipe tobacco. He actually gave me a tour of both their shop as well as the inventory they had in the back.
I mean, yeah, dude, your pictures were incredible. You know, I'm so used to being at the Squire, which of course is a, you know, smaller pipe shop tucked away here in the South. But like you know, so when we have, you know, let's say our stash of Dunhill 965 over there, like, it, you know, if I sold two tins of Dunhill 965 today, like, I'd be out. But at Ewan Reese, like, man, they got a whole vat of those things just waiting in the wings.
Man, they've got, it was awesome. I took some pictures,
so cool,
posted up there. They got a ton of stuff. And it was amazing to hear their story. I can't wait to get that shop talk out. It's as soon as I have a chance to sit down and edit it. Any additional audio right now is more difficult than it used to be in terms of editing, but I hope to get that out to you guys soon. But I would encourage you, if you are ever in the Chicago area, got to check this place out. I mean, their pipe smoking lounge, you know, because of the layers, it's raised up and like the train is going by the window, but like in a really cool kind of way.
It's
awesome. They've got a poker table, like a poker lounge in the back as well.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's incredible. Like next time, like next year, when we go to Chicago Pipe Show, like we need to
make a point to get out there.
I think
and see those guys.
Either the day before or the day after the Chicago Pipe Show, we should have a Country Squire meetup in the city, in downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
And actually go to this place, rent out that room, get some poker going. Like You just want to be there, man. It's awesome.
Man, it sounds incredible.
Ewan Reese, man.
And they do a lot of cigar stuff as well, right?
Tons of cigars.
I mean, so they're just constantly moving just real premium products and everything.
And, you know, just great customer service too. I mean, I'll share this as well. We had a situation where Breyer actually was buying a pipe.
Yeah, he mentioned this to me.
Yeah, and you know, Breyer
bought a beautiful, what is it, 2013 Savinelli collection pipe, right?
Yeah, gorgeous looking pipe.
Yeah, beautiful pipe.
And so, you know, they were trying to process his card, but you know, Breyer doesn't travel to Chicago all that much. So when they saw a transaction coming from Chicago, they thought for sure someone had stolen his card.
Yeah, we're flagging that,
right? But I mean, they were so kind. They worked out a deal with us so that Breyer gave them his information. And if they couldn't run it, then, they would call us, but otherwise they were going to take it, you know, so that we didn't have to wait, while they were working out that issue.
Yeah.
Got it all worked out. Breyer paid for the pipe and man, I just great customer service. I mean, just award winning, honestly. If I had an award, I'd give it to him.
Award-winning customer service.
So anyway, all that gushing to say, that really, really great location, great shop in the Chicago area. If you're ever out there, you got to check it out.
Well, my biggest question from your Chicago venture is, did you catch any Pokemon?
You just asked me that question. I was not going to bring it up.
I did.
How are you aware?
Because you didn't think I knew.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So I just kept hearing stuff about, I kept seeing these Facebook pictures of people in real places in real Jackson, Mississippi, but in front of these like little cartoon characters that I recognize as Pokemon because I played Nintendo in the 1990s.
Yeah.
And Game Boy and all
as many of us did.
As many of us did. So I was familiar enough to recognize that as what it was. And so, and then people kept telling me, I got these text messages from folks that said, man, there's a Pokemon gym right behind the Country Squire.
I was going to tell you, it's right there, yeah.
And I'm like, man, that is the best marketing I ever could have done without knowing that I did.
Dude, so you remember
when there's a Pokemon gym at the Country Squire.
Yeah, man.
So let's explain, okay, what's kind of got my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, Bo, but this company that I think you'd actually talked about the previous...
Ingress.
Ingress, this
yeah.
app that they came out with. You know, it was like a real life app. So basically, you know, take the camera on your phone and the GPS on your phone, and then you're walking around in your real reality, let's just say down your neighborhood street, and there's stuff that you can pick up and do and, you know, trade and manipulate and all these things. But, you know, and it's using your actual location and your actual, you know, surroundings for this, which is just crazy. And so at some point we're going to talk about pipe tobacco. I promise it's coming, but, it's just so fascinating to me. So,
It's soared.
What happened just to kind of finish up the first part is that they, you know, the Ingress, I guess it did fine, but like they use the same idea with Pokemon.
Yeah.
And like Pokemon, that's like a child of the 90s and 2000s. Like that's our jam.
90s nostalgia, the most powerful of nostalgias out there. You thought 80s nostalgia was powerful?
Dude.
You have not met the children of the 90s. See, like, there's this I've got a whole theory about the psychology of
all these people born in like 1975, like writing in like terrible letters on how the 80s were better.
I got a theory. It's not about better or worse. It's about how nostalgia hits us. I got a whole theory about it that I'm not going to get into now, but I will say this.
Please don't.
So, you know, yes, you got a gym right behind your house. You know, I mentioned it a while back.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I was like, this game's going to be huge. We got the Pokemon Go podcast that we set up months ago.
Timing was great.
I got foresight, baby. Yeah. Back then, I got the PokemonGoPodcast.com. We got Pokemon Go Pod on Twitter. We got Pokemon Go Podcast on Facebook. We've been doing preliminary monthly episodes. We got a guy out in Chattanooga. We got a guy out in California. And we've just been kind of gearing up for the game, getting hyped for it. And so the game takes off. It launches like what? It did like $7 billion worth for Nintendo.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're getting some crazy incoming downloads on Pod.
That's great. I mean, you know, I just think it's interesting, like these businesses can figure out ways to, like, you know, I guess encourage, you know, these stations to pop up around where they're at. I don't know how that works, if it's organic or what.
So this is the thing. Well, in fact, with Ingress, we tried to do this with your store. Because what Pokemon Go is doing is it's actually using...
I promise we're going to talk about pipes.
Yeah, I just thought about that too.
Yeah.
We need to get back on it. What Pokemon Go is doing, it's using the quote-unquote portal system from Ingress.
Right, right.
And back when I was playing that in preparation for Pokemon Go, we actually tried to set up a portal in front of your store. And when this happened, when like everything was going off and there were these gyms everywhere, I was like, oh, dang, what if the Country Squire is a Pokemon gym? Awesome.
And now it is.
Yes.
Basically. I just want to say real quick before we segue, Varge just wants us to know that the one that's really hard to find is Pinzansachu.
That's right.
Good. Yeah, it was great. We had that episode last week where we kind of talked about some of the Esoterica blends.
Yeah,
and,
man.
We had those bags of Tilbury and Dunbar and I think a couple tins of Pembroke that were left, and we literally got rid of the rest of that inventory on the show.
Sold out on the show
that night, which I thought was really funny.
Do you have something like one tin left in something right now?
No, it's all gone.
I just mean in general. Like, can we try that again? Like to sell?
Oh yeah, no, we need to do that more often. Like, let me find some crap that's been in the corner for like 20 years, and let's talk about it tonight on the show.
Black pepper. He's got black pepper. It looks like he's only got one tin.
That stuff looks good.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that it looks like it's only got one left.
It is interesting they named it Black Pepper. I got to open that can and try it.
All right. So there you go. Either John David tries it or you buy it. That's going to happen tonight on Country Squire Radio. Guys, we've got a great topic to talk to you about.
Yeah.
We're actually talking twist tobacco.
Twist tobacco.
Do the twist.
Ba 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 da ba.
Yeah, whatever. All right. So twist tobacco is a really, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, you go into your pipe shop all the time. You see beautiful pipes. You see all kinds of tins. You see wonderfully blended tobaccos. You go into the cigar lounge, if they've got one, or the humidor, you take a look at the beautiful cigars. You've seen it all before. But if you've never seen twist tobacco, when you first see it, it's a head scratcher.
It is.
Like, wait, do I need to get my doggy bag? Because it seems like, you know, Boo Boo just left something on the carpet.
A Boo Boo, right. Is this something I put, you know, with to feed the fish? Or like, what do I do with this? Yeah. Man, twist tobacco. Yeah, we just started carrying some at the Country Squire. And we decided we just want to have an episode where we kind of explore it and talk about it some. I'm actually learning some about it right now, you know, that, you know, hopefully we can have folks chime in that have had more experience with twist tobacco. But just thought we'd kind of explore it and talk about, you know, where it came from, kind of who the players are and what some different ones are that are out there.
Yeah, I'm curious, before we dive in, really, when I feel like this is a recent addition to the Country Squire.
Yeah.
In my experience, I haven't seen twist tobacco, gosh, a couple of months ago, maybe?
Well, the thing is, like, you can buy it in tins, right? And so the most common way you see it now are in tins. And we've had it here at the Country Squire in tins before. You'll see it. You can get it on any of the online retailers. You know, the usual suspects, they'll have the Sam Gay with twists and the Gay with and Hogarth twists and some of those that we'll talk about some in a bit. But you know, occasionally you'll find a shop that sells this stuff by weight or by length. And so what we've done at the Squire, we've just decided to take the twist tobacco, and I'm gonna hold it up so maybe our folks on the live show can see. But it's just a big old fat rope of tobacco,
yeah.
And it's
it looks like a rope your dog left on the carpet.
It does. matter of fact, I want to open it here. It's just crazy. Like, it's a big honking rope of tobacco. The twist tobacco, you know, a lot of times, you know, folks will see it in shops. It's not nearly as common anymore, but in a traditional setting in, you know, late 19th century, early 20th century America, it was very common to go in a general store or drugstore or something of this nature. And you know, you, if you wanted tobacco, you know, one of the ways and one of the predominant ways you could buy tobacco was in a rope form.
Huh.
And so, and matter of fact, there's some countries on earth that it's still very, very popular to buy twist tobacco. And so they still sell it like this commonly.
Wow. But,
so the tobacco that you see here tonight, the one I just pulled out of this jar is a Gaywith and Hogarth, the sweet whiskey twist. But what they would do, and it's really cool, you would have a like a tobacco plug cutter or a slicer that would be mounted in your shop, and then the tobacconist or the guy behind the counter at the drugstore or grocery store or wherever you were would actually just measure you out a length of this stuff.
Huh.
And so traditionally, tobacco in ropes is sold by the length. And so here at the Country Squire, we have decided to sell an inch of our twist tobacco for $1.75 an inch.
All right, so
isn't that funny? But it's just kind of weird.
You know, I'm looking around the shop. I don't necessarily see that you got some old school cutter. Can you just use a cigar cutter? Well, there you go.
Cigar cutter, baby.
I mean, it's about the right size.
Yeah, it really is. It's perfect for it. And so you just kind of pop it in there and can snip it real easy. But what's cool is I found online this beautiful old plug cutter from a general store. And it's a cast iron thing. And actually, I gave it to our good friend, too. And he is restoring it. He's actually restoring the blade.
Seriously?
This big cast iron tobacco plug cutter. And actually, but we're going to mount it right behind me over by that cigar box guitar.
Yeah.
And so when people come in, they can actually say, hey, I want an inch of that or I want 2 inches or whatever. And I can measure it out and then use this big plug cutter to slice it. So,
awesome.
Dude, talk about old school. Talk about like the spirit of the Country Squire.
I know, right?
That's going to be great. Yeah, it's going to be the folks at the FDA are going to love it. They're just going to love it. We'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that later, man.
But really cool. Twist tobacco obviously is very different nowadays than from what we're used to seeing. But you know, back in the 19th century, it was one of the most common ways to consume tobacco. Mm. And what was so great about it? It was extremely popular with working class folks and also military folks. And the idea is simple. You know, we've talked about this before with, you know, issuing rations of tobacco to, you know, military types or whatever. But, you've got a piece of tobacco that's very versatile. And so you can just take the twist or the rope and, you know, throw it in your pocket. And, you know, if you're working down, let's say, in the coal mine or something or on the ship, you know, if you're up in the, you know, next to the, you know, arsenal or something, you can, you know, just take your rope tobacco and just pull a plug off of it. Just literally take your pocket knife or just bite a plug off of it and just chew on your tobacco.
Were they always about that girth?
Well,
in terms of
that's the thing. They come in a variety. You've got these like super, super fat ones and like the little pigtail twists that are real tiny. And so you have a variety of these that you can kind of go from. But yeah, and so the tobacco was able to be consumed in the chewable form or in the smokable form. And that's what's beautiful about it. And, you know, as we got into the 20th century and, you know, tobacco, just with the advent of cigarettes and, you know, all this, and just with consumer culture too, you know, the art form of preparing the tobacco became less and less a focus, as you could imagine. So that's why, you know, for the longest time, you didn't see, you know, there are folks that smoked a pipe for all the 20th century and never know what a flake tobacco was or a plug tobacco or anything like that, because that the idea of preparing your tobacco and having something unique like that was just kind of out the window if you could, you know, light up a cigarette, smoke it, and be done with it all within, you know, the, you know, 45 seconds time or whatever. So,
you know, you talk
about it. Took a lot of the art and the kind of beauty of the preparation out of it.
Man, you talk a lot about kind of the, you know, how we kind of experience a little bit of a moment where people are trying to kind of to be a little bit more thoughtful about what they're doing. And you think about kind of the origin of where that comes from, right? About this kind of culture that we had of like consume, like,
yeah,
you know, get it out faster, make it easier and easier and easier and easier to consume to the point where it's like, all right, whoa, wait, hang on. Why are we consuming this in the first place? You know, like almost like there needs to be kind of a pause. Like, yes, we can get everything, you know, faster, quicker, you know, larger, bigger.
That's right.
But should we, like, you know, and kind of thinking about it. And part of the thought that goes into that is like, well, how is this made? How is it prepared? You know, is this special anymore? Or is this, you know, am I just doing this just to do this?
Yeah.
Something like a twist tobacco really does kind of, you know, string the right notes, so to speak, in terms of thinking about, you know, you want something that is clearly done with a lot of care and love. At this stage in the game, twist tobacco.
Is your thing. That's right. It's the most convoluted, baroque, like you know, just complex, you know, form of tobacco that you can find now. And it's beautiful. You know, if you look at it, if you can get past the kind of it came out of the backside of your dog thing, then you know, it really is a beautiful tobacco. You know, basically they form these, and the idea is they'll take long leaves of tobacco and, you know, kind of put them out next to each other. There's these videos you can watch online of this stuff. It's really fascinating, but they'll start to kind of form a long, bunch up a bunch of these leaves together, and then start to roll this bunch in a surrounding leaf of the same material, the same kind of leaf typically. And so, you know, you'll wind up with this long cigar looking thing that they eventually just keep twisting and twisting. And then, then you'll have different varieties. You know, you've got, just like any other tobacco, you've got flavored twists, and you've got, unflavored twists. You've got twists that are, have just been air cured or air dried out. And you've got other twists that have been heated and actually, maybe stoved or, baked or something to kind of, you know, help mellow them out a little bit.
Right.
It just comes in a variety, just like any other type of tobacco. But generally, the underlying theme of twist tobaccos is that they're just really strong. They're just really strong tobaccos.
Yeah. You know, it's hard not to look at it, and even just hearing you describe the process, and compare it to a cigar.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it even looks like one, you know, and you've got folks that have, you know, sat here in the shop and tried to smoke it like a cigar.
I was going to ask you.
Of course, failed miserably, right?
Well, it's a different wrapping process, I guess.
It is, yeah. I mean, and the leaves are a lot more moist and all this. You just, if you ever try it, you just can't really do it. But if you're looking for, though, a really strong tobacco experience, and one that also is going to make you work for it a little bit, then twist tobacco is for you. And it's one of those that, you know, whether you chew it or smoke it in your pipe, it's, you're going to get a different experience either way, but both are super powerful. One of our customers that is always looking for the biggest hit possible when it comes to, you know, tobacco products, he only uses, you know, premium tobacco products and, you know, pipes and cigars and things like that, but he wants something that's really strong. Hmm. And so I gave him, when we got this, this is a Brown Number 4 Finest Kindle Twist from Sam Gaywith, and we'll talk about these two in particular in a minute, but I gave him an inch of that just to, you know, it's kind of a free sample, just because I figured he'd like it. And of course, he came in the next day and bought a foot of it.
You gave him an inch, he wanted a mile.
I know, exactly. Well, he wanted a foot, right. And so he came in and got it. But I mean, this stuff, you know, it's strong enough to take down like a mountain lion.
Is that the one that you had me smell once? And I was like, oh.
No.
That's something else.
We're going to talk about that.
Okay, fair enough.
We're going to talk about that. So let me just kind of broad brushstrokes on the market out there for twist tobacco. Obviously, there's not a lot of makers that make this stuff anymore.
Sure.
There's a real twist tobacco originated in Britain. It's a very fine, you know, art form and a craft. There's this real fine, tobacco tradition in the Kindle region of England, which is in the northwest of England. It's kind of along the Irish Sea over there, if I'm not mistaken. But and so you'll find a lot of times these are labeled Kindle twists, and that's, you know, for the name of the region that they come from. You know, this Brown Number 4, it says Finest Kindle Twist, and so you'll see that a lot. But anyway, the twists are, you know, they come because of this tradition in England. It just still resonates there, and you've got these artisans that make this stuff and have done it for generations in their family and all that kind of thing. But you know, those are kind of some of the last people that are doing this. You do have a couple of American boutique makers that do some of this stuff, but, you know, as far as finding it readily available and, you know, able to order from, you know, folks like our online retailers or come in a shop like the Squire and get something, you know, the bulk of what you're going to find is either from Sam Gaywith or Gaywith and Hogarth, which, again, these are two brands that have a very fun intertwined history that we'll probably have to talk about at some point, just because of that too. The oldest tobacco brands in the world. but now are together, but still under different names. Anyway, it's convoluted, just like Twist Tobacco. But yeah, so you know, Sam Gaywith and Gaywith and Hogarth, they've got these twists that they still do all the time, and there's a huge variety of them. You know, you've got the twists that are not cooked at all, and then they, you know, might have, you know, cherry or rum or vanilla or berry or, you know, any kind of flavoring that are put on them. But then you've also got the twists that, you know, have been steamed or fermented. It's based almost like on the way to being a Cavendish or something. So, you know, the flavor is going to be a lot stronger, but the intensity of the nicotine is actually going to be a lot lower. Think of like, you know, as we talk about like coffee that, you know, has been, you know, roasted longer. It's got a bolder flavor, but it's got, you know, less caffeine in it. And it's right. A similar thing we talk about with pipe tobacco a lot happens as well. So
a lot of similarities there.
Anyway, on the rope, just we'll talk about these two that I've got here tonight. The Kindle Twist number 4, this is Sam Gaywith, and it's a strong, natural tobacco. You think like Virginias and Burleys in here that are just real natural and strong, but I'm gonna let you smell this. It's just a real bold tobacco. Here, hold that.
It's very different. If you want to smell twist tobacco, you really got to get up on it. Like, it doesn't really have a jar note.
No,
to
you
it.
Do. Yeah, you do. It's got it's subtle. You know, when you're picking it out of the jar or the tin or whatever. Yeah, definitely is. But
I feel like I have to smoke this to get it.
I think you should. Or you could chew it.
How do you break it? How do you break it up?
Well, and that's the beauty. So, you know, typically, historically a lot of folks that would use like a plug knife or a tobacco knife to cut this kind of thing. Today you might see, you know, folks like you and me use something like a cigar cutter to kind of shred some of this stuff up. But typically, you know, I'll sell it by the inch. So if you come into the Squire, you can buy an inch of this tobacco or 2 inches of the other one or whatever. And we're going to carry more at some point is the hope. But, you know, you'll buy this by the inch, and then when you get it and ready to prepare it, you'll kind of start to slice it in thin strips, you know, thin slices. So
when you say slices, you're talking like almost medallion.
Yeah, like a medallion. Yeah. That's right. And so, you know, and a lot of folks, too, will then start to kind of tear it into shreds just like you would.
Right.
You know, let's say you open a can of a Scudo or a can of, you know, Dunhill Luxury Navy Rolls or something like that, and you find these medallions in there. You just start to tear them apart.
Gotcha.
And then prepare it in the same way. A little bit goes a long way with these tobaccos. So the Brown number 4, this tobacco is not, it hasn't been heated or, you know, stoved or, you know, fermented at all. This is just straight up tobacco that hasn't been processed a whole lot except for air cured. And so you're just going to get a lot of nicotine. Like this is a tobacco that is well enjoyed after a big old lunch or, you know, dinner or something like that to kind of cap off the day. Like you just don't want to do this on an empty stomach unless you're a mountain lion.
Yeah.
You know,
very similar to the cigar we referenced earlier in the show.
Right. That was like a, you know, Arturo Fuente 858 give to a, you know, child. But anyway.
You would not? And no.
No, I would not give it to a child unless the child were 18. But, you know.
There you go.
The other one we've got tonight, this is fun.
This one has my interest peaked.
Gaywith and Hogarth. It's a sweet whiskey twist. And so this tobacco actually has been cased in some whiskey. I don't know what kind of whiskey they used. I probably should find out. But I'm actually going to cut some of this off so I can kind of show you.
Yeah. You going to smoke it?
And I don't think so tonight. But cut a slice of that off.
I mean, straight up, just like chopping a cigar.
Yeah, guys. I mean, you're just chopping it off right there. And you can see kind of the twist is unraveling. Right. You know, I mean, they literally just take these tobacco leaves. They kind of have a center of tobacco that they put, you know, in the middle. Imagine a bunch of leaves lined up next to each other, kind of bundled. And then they'll take an outside leaf and kind of wrap around this and then start to, you know, to form the twist, the actual twist of tobacco. But it's just a lot of fun. You know, it's definitely a unique and interesting experience. I don't believe the whiskey twist is very, very processed either, other than, you know, maybe just, you know, the whiskey flavoring. So again, you're going to have a really strong tobacco. The more they cook the tobacco, again, the more you're going to get less nicotine, less of the tar and things like that that really leave you feeling it afterwards. And so you know, I just love, you know, what people have to say about this stuff. The one you were talking about earlier, is one made by our friends at Sam Gaywith, and it's called Black XX, Kindle Twist. And it's just one of these that, you know, it's kind of got a notorious,
it'll make you ask why.
It will.
That was my segue. I was just like, why?
Why would I do that to myself? or my pipe, for that matter. Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's just one of those that, you know, is extremely polarizing when it comes to, you know, you know, the tobacco world. Folks that are really into strong tobaccos, they love the Black XX, Finest Kindle Twist, by Sam Gaywith. Folks that, you know, if you're an aromatic pipe smoker, if you're, I mean,
like, just if you enjoy aromatics.
Most pipe smokers are just not going to care for, you know, the Black XX and frankly, most twist tobaccos, because they tend to be so strong. But, the Black XX particularly just has such a fascinating, story. I don't have that here. I did not pick that up at the Squire as a bulk, tobacco on purpose. Because I don't want to smell it.
Feedback wasn't.
No, okay. I just don't like, even if it would sell, I just don't want to deal with it.
Right,
like,
I
don't want to see it. I don't want to smell it. Like, it, you know, when you open up the tin of the Black XX, it looks like, kind of what I would imagine, you know, opening a diaper. It's just really foul.
Yeah.
I want to read just a couple of reviews of Black XX that are online. These are fun.
They should be good.
Occasionally,
yeah.
You see stuff like this, but a couple of these are off tobaccoreviews.com. He says, just some random folks. I was in my local tobacco shop and thought I saw a piece of, dog crap in a bag. He said, out of my curiosity, I asked the question, what the hell is that in the bag? I should have known something was weird when the response I got was, ha, 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 ha. Well,
wait, that was the guy that owned the store.
I know, right? He was like, hey, watch this while this sucker buys this stuff, you know? He said, well, to make an hour-long conversation short, I loaded it into my Nordic free hand, and, well, it made my taste buds feel like they were burnt, and the smell was very, very unpleasant. I would never smoke it again. Blah, blah, blah. We've got other folks that say,
you sell it in your store when somebody wants to buy it, you're like, ah, no, you don't.
Black XX Rope. I really wanted to like this. I even had it shipped to me 2-day express. My first impression was, quote, wow, look at the blackened dog crap coiled up in the can. Despite my first impression, it looked pretty yummy. And then he goes on to say, he liked the punch. He got more punch off the Penzance than this for some reason.
Really?
When he, you know, smoked it, he didn't care for as much of the taste. Got another one, that says, quote, this is awful and never to forget experience. From the appearance to taste in your mouth, it is gross. And if you are very tolerable, it tastes like you soaked leftover cigars for days in pond water and then tried to smoke it. Sam Gaywith has good tobacco blends. This one is not, money just gone to the wind. And then you got another one. Are you kidding me? Very strong. Does not taste like tobacco. Ruined two pipes with it.
Wow.
Now, because I'm an idiot, I'll probably never taste food again.
Yeah, to be fair, if you ruined two pipes with it, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice.
I hope that pipe was a really crummy
pipe. You can't
fool
a fool twice.
Here's another one. After a few abortive attempts with its stronger cousin, the Brown Rope, I tried the Black XX, hoping it would be more flavorful and mild. Taste and aroma is primarily reminiscent of burning plastic. I've never gotten through more than about half a bowl. The ash is dark, malevolently gray, and the room note is acrid.
So clearly this is a tobacco loved by the community.
Yeah, another one says, notes of burning hair, methane, and melting plastic, 1 star. And my favorite of all these about Sam Gay with Black XX, and I love it. Like, if you smell it, it really does smell like someone took a steak and kind of like, just kind of burned it a little too much.
No disrespect to Sam Gaywith.
They make some awesome blends, and some people love this stuff, but you know, they're like Briar.
Yeah, some people
actually, Briar doesn't like this for the.
Some people love this stuff. You're right. Some people are in prison. Rob people. Some people are in insane asylums.
My favorite by far, this quote, this tobacco will actually make you paranoid. After I smoked about a half a bowl, I began seeing things. I spent the next 2 hours afraid I would die. and then I spent the next hour after that afraid that I wouldn't.
All right, now I kind of want to smoke it.
Isn't that out of control?
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I'm just saying, Bo, like, you know.
I want to set this again, right. And that, my friends, is how you introduced me to Twist Tobacco, putting that in my face.
No, it is. You know, and the thing is, that is one type of Twist Tobacco. That's Black XX by Sam Gaywith. But, you know, again, it's the funny thing is, even though the taste and smell of it is very, you know, acrid and, you know, strong, the strength of it from a, you know, strength standpoint that it's going to have on your physiology,
sure,
is not nearly so. But
man,
as much as these, you know, the Whiskey Twist and the Brown Number 4, these are, you know, tobaccos that haven't been you know, heated as much, and so they're going to probably taste, frankly, a little milder. But then they're going to be stronger tobaccos. So
great stuff, man. Not so much that, but Twist Tobacco in general, really, really interesting. You know,
it's fascinating.
Pappy Joe actually tweeted in, just kind of, you know, reminding us and the folks listening that, you know, rope tobacco was standard on sailing vessels. Which,
that's right.
Of course,
that's
given
right.
The time, makes a lot of sense.
Pappy Joe, a veteran of the United States Coast Guard.
And we salute him for
very
it.
Very thankful for that.
Absolutely. Right. And yeah, so Twist Tobacco. And so I did, you know, did you mention, I don't think you did, did you mention how you first discovered Twist Tobacco?
Yeah, just, you know, honestly, I didn't even know much about it other than just reading about it in history books.
From a
consumer standpoint, the first time I ever interacted with it was when I just started getting a few tins here at the shop of some of the Sam Gaywith stuff. And so, you know, you open the tin, obviously, you know, if you're only talking a couple ounces of tobacco, you know, you open the tin and they've basically just taken a section of this rope and sliced it off and put it in the tin.
So in my head, I was thinking tin, kind of like the Bullseye Flake, you know, which obviously...
Yeah. Now, and those tobaccos in their original form look a lot like this.
Right. But when you get a tin of Twist Tobacco,
when you get
it looks
a tin
like
of actual Twist, particularly from Gaywith and Hogarth or Sam Gaywith, it's going to look like that. But
sure.
Just it'll be, you know, maybe
deformed a... deformed cigar.
Yeah. Maybe a cut or, you know, or something you... found in your backyard. But yeah, but you know, but those few inches that are kind of just cut off and put in the tin. So yeah, and it really is just quite an experience to interact with. The beauty of it is that, you know, you've got this wonderful leaf that you know, that we're so fond of, that you can either smoke or put in your mouth.
Man. And there you go. You just did. Chewing it up. Have you ever chewed it before?
Mm-mm,
this is your first time doing it on
No, but it's really good.
Is it? All right.
It reminds me of that Red Man chewing tobacco that occasionally I used to do if my mom's watching earmuffs.
No, he didn't.
But like, in college, like on long road trips, occasionally I put a little Red Man in on a long road trip or something.
Fair enough.
I figured it would be kind of sweet. You do taste a little bit of the whiskey. That's pretty strong.
I'm not a chewing tobacco guy.
I you didn't strike me as one.
Yeah.
That's really strong. Wow.
Now, okay, you want me to get you some water now? Do you want me to take care of you? Because I will do it.
The night's young.
All right, man.
Twist Tobacco.
Twist Tobacco. What a great legacy item in the tobacco family. You know what I mean? Like something that has a strong history throughout, something that I think that, you know, you don't... Honestly, if you walk into most pipe shops, you're not going to necessarily just... you know, see it, you know, barrels and barrels of it on the shelves, so to speak. But something that is worth looking into and trying and, you know, maybe not chewing as John David runs to the other side of the store in order to spit it out.
I didn't spit it out. I just have to get a little spit cup.
Not that kind of
shit. It just got so classy, didn't it?
Oh, my goodness. All right, man. Well, I'll tell you what. I can class this place up real quick.
Please do.
You know how?
Yeah, I have an idea.
By talking about Missouri Meerschaum.
Exactly.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yes. Love our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Absolutely. Look, Missouri Meerschaum, of course, is a sponsor for this show. And if you have not gotten a Missouri Meerschaum pipe, I feel like I don't know what to do for you. I'm sorry. Like, you got to have a Missouri Meerschaum pipe. The beautiful thing is, we're not just talking corncob pipes. Mm-hmm. We are talking corncob pipes, mm-hmm. but we're not just talking about a corncob pipe. We're talking about a corncob pipe made with quality and with some fantastic shapes. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I love about Missouri Meerschaum is they're not afraid to get experimental with some of the designs they have. And you know, we've been taking a look at different pipes that they offer throughout the last several weeks. We've got one sponsoring the show tonight, and that is the Missouri Meerschaum Eaton.
Eaton, yeah.
Eaton. Like you've been eaten, and now you're full.
And right. And so you're going to smoke your Eaton.
That's right. the Missouri Meerschaum Eaton is a smaller pipe, a smaller bowl pipe. So, you know,
yeah.
Would you actually smoke a twist tobacco in a smaller bowl pipe, or would you actually need something bigger for it?
No, actually, a small bowl pipe would be, like the Eaton from Missouri Meerschaum, would be a perfect pipe for twist tobacco. But twist tobacco is so strong, a little bit goes a long way. You know, you read through a lot of these reviews and people are like, man, it was pretty good, but I could only get it through, you know, a quarter of a bowl or half a bowl or something
right,
like that.
Right.
So it does tend to be strong. And so you'll be able to, you know, with a smaller bowl pipe like the Eaton, enjoy just a little bit and then, you know, move on about your day.
Well, you know, if you've been listening to Country Squire Radio for some time, you know, we've mentioned tons and tons and tons of tobaccos. And one of the best ways to sample new tobaccos is with a good quality corncob pipe. So check out the Eaton from Missouri Meerschaum. If you don't have one, that might be yours. Hey, and if you've got one, if you've got an Eaton pipe, go ahead and take a picture of yourself smoking it this week. We'll retweet that out. And we will share with the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum how you guys are supporting them while they're supporting us.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, guys, we have got a pipe question of the week. This one comes in from Henry Rankin.
Yeah.
I'm a regular listener of the show. In your opinion, do the new regulations effectively make it impossible for a local tobacco shop to sell a bulk blend like Luxury Bullseye Flake because the repackaging of the tobacco would make the local tobacco shop a manufacturer? Again, this is coming from Henry. It's a good question. This was actually something that I talked to the good folks at Iwin Reese about.
What did they have to say about it?
You know, I won't speak for them.
Okay.
I think that'd probably be best if I don't
speak
for them, but
I can speak for me.
Yeah, please do.
I think by the letter of the new regulations, if a retailer in the traditional sense is not registered as a manufacturer, okay, then they can legally not sell tobacco in this manner. Like if you're viewing the show tonight on a live show, behind the camera here, we've got our tobacco bar. And so without being a manufacturer, it will be, by the letter of the law, not proper or legal, I guess, by federal regulation to sell tobacco like this by weight that has been packaged by someone else. And so, my understanding, if I understand the law, the regulations correctly, is that for a tobacconist such as myself, and to sell a tobacco such as Luxury Bullseye Flake by the ounce, what I would have to do is become a federally recognized tobacco manufacturer, okay? Just like Lane or, you know, our friends at Stokeby or, Sam Gaywith or whoever.
Sure.
And then I would have to register that when I sell a product called Luxury Bullseye Flake, that it is Luxury Bullseye Flake from Peter Stokeby. And so there's kind of a two-step process there. It's like, okay, you have to be considered a manufacturer, and then you also have to, let the government know that when you're selling that, this is what you're selling. How is that going to work out practically? I think it's not going to be easy for people to follow and maintain a true sense of upstandingness with the spirit of the law. We're going to do everything we can at the Country Squire to sell stuff like, you know, Luxury Navy Flake and Luxury Twist Flake and all the others by the ounce. If that means I've got to go, you know, register as a manufacturer, and then turn around and say, okay, I'm selling this tobacco product that is already, you know, listed as a tobacco product from this other manufacturer. Now I'm just going to repackage it and sell it as the exact same thing. If I have to go through an extra hoop to do that, I'll do that. The question is, how much time is it going to take for that to be approved? And then how much money is it going to take for that to go through the process of being approved? And those are answers we don't have. And we just don't know.
You know, I've seen some different things going online, even as recent in the last week, about, you know, being proactive in this space. And hopefully next week we'll have a little bit more information about how you can get more proactive in this space as a listener of Country Squire Radio and a fan of the pipe tobacco and the community as a whole. So, but great question. Thank you so much.
Really good question. to throw a little red meat to a pack of wolves right now, you know, I will say, don't look for bulk tobaccos sold by the weight to disappear from the country squire anytime soon.
All right.
I will say that. We're committed to doing whatever we have to do in order to, you know, to keep a traditional pipe shop active here at the country squire. And it's in our DNA. It's in tobacco's, you know, premium tobacco's history. And, you know, we don't even think the spirit of the regulations are aimed primarily at shops like us and fully believe that. So, yeah, don't expect your favorite tobaccos to disappear here at the country squire.
All right, man. Well, good stuff. Henry, thanks so much for sending that pipe
question.
Great question,
yeah.
And if you've got a pipe question of the week, you can send it in csr@potastery.com.
Quick fire questions.
Ow! Are you ready, sir?
I am.
All right, here we go. Knife and fork or just fork?
Knife and fork. I'm not particularly classy, but like, give me a knife. I think so.
You know, earlier tonight we had dinner. I had along with dinner a lovely heirloom tomato, like a beautiful slice of an heirloom tomato. And I was thinking as I was getting forks and everything out, I was like, well, do we need a knife for this? And I thought, no, we don't need a knife. It's a tomato.
Yeah.
So I just used a fork. Now, had it been a steak, would have used a knife, right?
Yeah.
So
like, it depends on the food item.
It does. I think that's the spirit of the question. Like, is it fork versus knife and fork when the requirements of the food do not necessarily require a knife?
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's fair. You'd go, what would you go?
Some things I just think you're supposed to eat with a knife, even if you can just eat it with a fork.
Okay, fair enough. I see what you're going. Yeah. So you're knife and fork. I'm going to go just fork.
Yeah.
Convenience. Left or right?
Right.
Left. All right. And grandma or grandpa?
Don't make me pick. That's not fair.
I know. That is an evil question.
That's not fair.
That is an evil question.
Yes.
Oh, and that is a... that is not an answer. Gosh, yes. You know what?
That is not a fair question.
No, I mean, one day I will.
That's like, which one of your kids do you like better? Like, you know,
I
Sally
hope,
or Billy?
I hope to one day be a grandpa. I mean, okay. At this stage in my life, if I had to choose to spend a little extra time with my grandfather or my grandmother, I probably would choose to spend it with my grandfather.
Okay.
Why
is that?
Well, so part of it is just kind of a legacy thing, right? Like wanting to feel more like, you know, he walked and then my father walked and then I'm now a father. You know, like there's a lineage kind of tied to kind of the male narrative of our family.
Right.
And so from that standpoint, you know, I guess there's that. And then also the fact that, you know, of all my grandparents, you know, my maternal grandmother died well before I was born. So
right.
I never knew her. Now my step grandmother, who's always been, I mean, even calling her step grandmother is kind of odd, just cause she's my grandmother.
Well, that's probably right.
Right. So, but you know, and then, but then my grandfather on my father's side, who I knew, the majority of my life, passed away a couple of years ago. And so, you know, gosh, I think a lot. I shouldn't think too much about it cause I'll get emotional, but point being, I would love to spend a couple extra hours with him.
It'd be
so
powerful. Yeah.
That's how I'm going to answer that unfair question. I'll choose grandfather
you did,
for that reason.
You gave a lot more information than I did.
You just said yes.
I want them all back. I'll tell you that right
That'll
now.
That'll work. And then Dan or James Brown?
James Brown. Yeah.
Excellent quick fire questions. Those actually came in from Mortensen Debbie. You know, he actually sent in ours last week. He actually sent a whole list, so I divided them up. Next week, we've got a great list of quick fire questions coming in from Dan Schultz.
Oh, yeah, our friend Dan. Yeah. Just placed an order, actually.
Oh, right on. Very good. Very good. So, hey, if you've got some quick fire questions, go ahead and send those in. csr@potastery.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
All right, we got some great listener feedback for this week. But first, let's tell you about the final sponsor for this week, thispipelife.com.
This Pipe Life, man. Yeah. Great new online community geared towards, you know, younger, more plugged in, you know, pipe smokers that are all, you know, integrated with social media and, you know, content that, you know, we all know and love, you know, such as photography and music and craft processing and everything else.
Man, they've got a it's a wonderful community. They've also got a wonderful forums on there called The Pipeline. And, you know, it's a great place to be. If you haven't checked it out yet, thispipelife.com. It's a wonderful website. You know, and you mentioned it, you know, there's an element, you look at it and it's very visual, as matching the pipe smoker of the day.
You said that so much better than I was trying to get across. It was like, how do I take this awesome aesthetic that they've created on this, you know, online community and describe it? And it's hard to describe unless you go check it out. Obviously, you have to go, you know, join and become a member, which is free and all that. But you get access to these wonderful, you know, amenities such as the forums and also reviews and ways to integrate your personal pipe experience with, to the world with other, you know, to show to other pipe smokers.
Yeah. If you haven't done so already, head over to thispipelife.com, register yourself if you haven't, and head over to The Pipeline. Let them know what you're smoking. Let them know you heard about it on Country Squire Radio.
Yeah. Hey, a couple of tweets I want to mention. Wes Brown says, he's at Life of Briar. Wes, of course, a really good friend from the Austin, Texas area. He says, seems if you sell PS Bullseye as PS Bullseye, you're a quote-unquote reseller. Take components and blend it into something else, a manufacturer. Wes, that would make logical sense, but since we're dealing with the behemoth federal U.S. government, anytime you are repackaging something, you are by the letter of my, this is my understanding. I'd love it if someone were to correct me, but anytime you're repackaging, you know, something, even if you're selling it as the exact same thing, by the letter of these regulations, you're then therefore considered a manufacturer and have to go through the hoops that manufacturers have to go through. Keep in mind what's going on here, okay? These regulations were not, they didn't think about the pipe community at all when they did this, okay? This is geared towards college kids in their, you know, closet, you know, putting together a bunch of juices together for you to put in this vaporizer thing to inhale as a vape, okay?
Right,
now,
right.
I have friends at vape. I get it, like, you know,
this is not a judgmental space.
It's not. I'm just telling you what the spirit of this is about. Okay?
We're also not a vaping podcast.
We're not right. A vaping podcast. Right. This is a pipe smoking. This is a tobacco pipe smoking podcast.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, the idea here is, okay, we want people are going to be combining all these, you know, crazy juices and nicotine, you know, flavors and all this kind of stuff together. We want the public to know what's in there. So in order to do this, we're going to make all tobacco, you know, products, or, you know, that contain nicotine, to go through these steps, right? Well, you know, they're not thinking that I'm literally taking this product and taking it out of a bag, putting it in a canister that looks like this, and then weighing it by weight and reselling it. That didn't even cross their mind, you know, in this kind of stuff. They're thinking about the college kid that might be in the back room putting all kinds of crazy stuff in these, you know, e-liquids, and then, you know, selling it to you with this, you know, device that heats these coils up and creates this, you know, smoke that you inhale and gives you a buzz, but without the tar or whatever, you know. And so you're right. What you said should be correct, but by the letter of, you know, what they've put out here, is not. And so, you know, we'll continue to talk about some of these things over time. Again, I want to be very clear. Do not anytime soon look for your favorite blends at the Country Squire to disappear. We will do literally whatever we can, to continue to sell, premium tobaccos by the ounce that we custom blend here at the shop, and are committed to that. That's our identity. You know, we have a proud tradition of being a pipe shop first, and that is very rare in our country, and we're going to continue to do that. So, I think you have a good point there. Another tweet, Pappy, our friend Pappy Joe, he says, Twist tobacco is made by feeding your dog tobacco and then waiting for a couple hours.
Yeah, I saw that. That was good.
And then our friend Varge says, only if your dog is a licensed tobacco manufacturer. Exactly.
So. Wonderful. All right, man, we also got some listener feedback in. We got I can't remember how we got this in, but this is from Luke Lawson. who writes in saying, I love the videos. So I guess it's from YouTube, actually. Luke Lawson on YouTube, who said, I love the videos. If y'all keep these videos up, you need to look into opening an opening song. A cool tune to start the show. Keep up the guy. Great work, guys. You know, actually, for our pre-show audience that will not appear on the podcast, unfortunately, or probably on the YouTube video when it's all said and done, I actually did break into song.
It was very fortunate. We want to keep all of our listeners. I'm just kidding. You actually have a good voice, Bo. If I were to break out into song, people would run and scream. And,
no, the people had spoken their heads on in Twitter. Sand, but they don't like me.
You know, one thing, our good friend Brian over at Pipes Magazine radio show, he has a whole section of his show that's devoted to music traditionally, and I love that. So, you know a lot more about music, Bo, than I do, you know. But honestly, I think we're both not particularly cued in when
not
it comes
nearly
to like.
Not as versed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wish I knew more about music. But,
you know, we were guests on a wonderful, I think, the Cigar Jukebox podcast where they actually.
That was really
up,
cool. Yeah,
yeah, music and really song. Cool. And, you know, at some point, I think we made the comment then, we've made it since, and I'll make it yet again, but at some point it would be cool to do a Squire Select pairing up pipe tobacco and music.
Yeah. I think our listeners might give us more license to do that than pipe tobacco and barbecue.
Oh, there it is. All right. We also got a comment on Facebook, from Patrick Barrett. And Patrick Barrett, this is in reference to...
Oh, I can read this. Do you want me to read this?
Yeah, Patrick Barrett, this is actually in reference to me going to Chicago. He actually saw the pictures that we were posting out.
Yeah.
He made some great commentary there.
Yeah, love Patrick, good friend from the Mississippi Gulf Coast. He says, the question is, now that our small town boy has seen the big city pipe shop, will he be able to be satisfied with a quaint shop back at home? Or will we have to hear, you know, they have this up at the shop in Chi-Town? Wow.
Look, I'm
Squire.
If you
ever come in and say that about my shop, you're probably right.
No, man. I'm Squire to
you know, your little shop, your little shop's cute and all. You know, you've got your little dusty corner with your cobwebs and you know, a few tins of this and that. But, up in Chi-Town.
No, man, look, it was a don't get me wrong. Iwan Reese's is a great experience. And if you haven't checked it out, you have to. But I would say the exact same thing. And I do on a weekly basis that if you've not checked out the Country Squire, that is also amazing.
You know, what we lack in, maybe inventory or stuff like that, we make up for in spades, in character.
Yeah, charm, man. Like this is it's a beautiful experience. It's
not charm, but character.
You're a charming guy.
No, it's charming. Yeah, it's charming.
Just look, you walk in. Look, you got the cigar guitar behind us. You got the tobacco bar now front and center in the shop. You can't see it on the live show, but you've got the tobacco leaves hanging from the roof, which is awesome.
This is the exact lounge area that Jerry Clower used to come in and make up some of his material. Right,
I'm telling you, like this is
Willie Morris. Like before he wrote My Dog Skip, like sat in that corner right there and watched Secretariat win the Triple Crown.
Like we're
give
almost,
me a break, dude. This place is awesome.
We're almost standing in the spot.
Yeah.
Wow. But I mean, that's the thing. I would never.
Just got chill bumps.
I'm Squire till the day I die. But great stuff. Thanks so much for sending in all the wonderful feedback, both before the show and live on Twitter.
Happy Joe, your order did get shipped today. You just asked me that on Twitter, and it did.
And by the way, Justin Griffin on Twitter is tweeting in that he's playing Pokemon Go, and Execute just popped up in front of the show. So there you go. It ties it all together, and I think there's no better way to do it than to twist it all up like that.
Waka waka.
Hey, if you haven't been following the show on Twitter, you should. It's at Squire Radio. You can follow us individually. I'm at The Real Bo York.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop at _ Country Squire.
All that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com, where you can tune in every single Monday night at 6:30 Central Time. That's 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern for the live show. We'd love to have you here. And, you know, just before we went live, we were discussing what it might be like to not just go live in a digital sense.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, we joke all the time about our quote-unquote live studio audience.
Which is always Briar.
Hey, Briar. Say hey, Briar.
And sometimes right. His girlfriend, too. Sometimes his lovely girlfriend.
Sometimes. But we were thinking about maybe next time, perhaps even when we do a Squire Select, opening it up to a live whiskey and tobacco pairing in the shop.
Yeah.
Got chairs out here. We can actually have people go woo at the top of the show. You know, like, woo.
Hopefully we will inspire them to go woo.
Yeah, yeah. We can hold up a sign that says woo.
Maybe if we throw them beads or something.
Please applause. Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. But one way or the other, we're looking at new ways that we can kind of bring the live experience even more live for those who are able to make it.
That's right. And if you're able to make like a pipe pilgrimage to the Squire, like, you know, so many of our good friends have done. And,
absolutely.
We want to try to figure out new ways to make that even more special for you. So anyway, just thinking down the road a little bit.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, I don't want to get it twisted, but we had a great show tonight.
Dude, I had a rope-a-dope of a show. It was so stupid.
All right, man. Let's go have a night.
See you, brother.
Been listening to Country Squire Radio, a member of the Podastery Network. For more information on this and other shows, please visit podastery.com.